We'll pick up with, I think we're at verse 7, John chapter 1, verse 7. You know, we're still in what's called the introduction, the prologue, in the first 18 verses of that first chapter. We've already went over the first five verses were the pre-existence of the Word described in verses 1 through 5. We're now in the second section, which is the Word manifested to the Jews and their rejection of Him. And so we're beginning then with, we've already went over verse 6, where John the Baptist is a witness for Him. So that's where we're going to pick up in our study on the book of John. So in verse 7, it says, "This man came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that through him he might believe." So when we say, "This man," who are we talking about?
Jesus.
Who?
John the Baptist.
John the Baptist, okay. John the Baptist, we found out in verse 6, where it said that there was a man sent from God whose name was John. That was John the Baptist. And this man, John the Baptist, who named him?
God.
Yeah, how do we know that? Luke 1, verse 6. If someone would turn there and read verse 13. Luke 1, verse 13. Okay, so that was God speaking through an angel, told Zacharias, the father of John, that he would have a son, and he was to name him John. There was a little problem on that, wasn't there? They wanted to name him other names, but and he was still, he couldn't speak, and so he wrote down, "His name will be John," and that's what it was. So there... The original meaning of John, and I think maybe we've already gone through this that part right on the end, but it says that he came for a witness, so he was a witness to give testimony. So we're picking up then in the middle of that verse 7, to bear witness of the light. Why bear witness of the light? What was that to do? Yeah, that's basically. And what does it say in verse 7, the last part of verse 7?
That all
through him might believe. And that's preparing the way so that people would believe this is the Messiah. This is the Son of God. And this is the Christ. So that was his the reason. Now, I think we can kind of begin to see a connection here between testimony. When we talk about witness, we're talking about people giving testimony, a story that will concerning a person or a thing. So I think we can begin to see a connection here between testimony and belief. It says, through him, and then we have already answered that. That was John the Baptist. Through John the Baptist, he will be the first in a series of witnesses to Jesus. And we're going to have that. The book of John is full of witnesses. And it's all about proving that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. And so John the Baptist is going to be the first one, first witness. So why does the testimony in the Gospel of John, or what does it produce? What does testimony in the Gospel of John produce? Just one word.
Belief.
Okay, so there we're getting into that. Testimony in equals belief, or leads to belief. Let's read from John the 19th chapter, verse 35. John 19, 35.
"He who has seen has testified, and his testimony is true. And he knows that he is telling the truth, so that you may believe."
Okay. And also then, just flip on over, Bob, to 20 and 30, chapter 20, verses 30 and 31.
"Truly, Truly, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name.
So isn't it beautiful how we just see these equations, these things just happening? We have witnesses that present testimony that produces belief, and that belief then turns into faith and trust in God, and believing that we may have life in his name. So that fits in with what we were talking about when the Word was light and life. So see the connection. It just all flows together so beautifully when we stitch these things or we place these things together. Now, there were many who testified concerning Jesus, especially in the book of John. But I want you to turn all the way back to Deuteronomy, the 19th chapter and verse 15. See how this fits in from the Old Testament over to the New. Deuteronomy 19, verse 15.
One witness is not enough to convict anyone accused of any crime or offense they may have committed. A matter must be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses.
Okay, so that was kind of a standard or a rule or a principle in the Old Testament. There had to be at least two or three witnesses. Whether it was convicting someone of a sin or a crime or just believing someone, it needs to be two or three witnesses. So we're seeing that carried out over in the Gospel of John. And as we said, there are many that's going to testify. One was a hopelessly afflicted man in John 5, verse 11. John 5, verse 11. Okay. And then he went ahead and they said, well, who is this man? And what did he answer? In the 13th verse. He said, I don't know who the man was. But he said, that man that made me well, he said this. And they said, well, who was he? And he said, I don't know who he was. So how could he testify? But he was testifying of someone he didn't know who he was. But he knew whoever had did that to him had to be a great person. And so he was a unsuspecting witness. And that happens. So we can be a witness on purpose, or we can be one kind of unsuspecting or by default. And Martha was another one. We'll get to that. Some year down the road, in John 11, verses 24 and then 27. Let's just read these so we can... 11, 24, and 27. Okay, so there was a great testimony. She knew what she was saying. She intended to say it. And that's she's giving testimony as a witness about Jesus. And then Jesus himself gives testimony. And this is kind of interesting, so I want us to take just a minute on this. And we're going to read scriptures in the 5th chapter of John, verses 31 through 33. And then we'll read 36 through 39. If someone would read those, please.
31 through
33. Yeah, 5, 31 through 33.
If I bear witness of myself, my witness is not true. There is another that bears witness of me, and I know that the witness which he bears of me is true. You sent them to John that he bear witness unto the truth.
Okay, and then go down to 36 through 39.
But I have greater witness than that of John, for the works which the Father hath given to me to finish, the same works that I do, bear witness of me that the Father hath sent me. And the Father himself, which hath sent me, hath borne witness of me. You have neither heard his voice at any time nor seen his shape. And you have not his word abiding in you. For whom he sent, him you believe not. Verse 39 as well.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and read 39.
For in them you think you have eternal life, but and they are not they which testify of me.
Okay. So these are kind of confusing section here about, but here we have Jesus who is bearing self-witness. He's a self-witness of himself. And what about a self-witness? How does that stand up?
Well, not very well.
Not very well, normally. But it does. You know, here he said, okay, if I bear witness myself, my witness is not true. That's how we would think about it. But then as he continues on down through there, he says in verse 36, but my witness is greater than John's. So John was giving witness and testimony, but Jesus said, mine is greater than John's. And then in verse 37, because he said, the Father himself has testified of me. And then on over in the 8th chapter of John, and in verse 13, it says, and the Pharisees therefore said to him, you bear witness of yourself, your witness is not true. So they were trying to throw that up to him, that self-witness, self-testimony was not to be taken as true. But I think that there's a good lesson there, because that Jesus did testify about himself, and it's because through the Father and because of who he was. So here we have fact that's being spoken. We have witnesses that are giving testimony, and it's fact. They're giving the facts. These are the facts. We testify to it. And so their testimony then, when you have a fact, and when you have testimony about the fact, then that brings us right back to equaling what? Fact plus testimony equals belief or faith. Yeah, so we have that same formula that just keeps repeating and showing itself through here. See, believing is equal to receiving and obeying. Verse 12, chapter 1, verse 12, which we're approaching. What does that say? Okay, so we see how that's just all tying together, really, in a very beautiful series of a story. Really, it's a story. So you know, in John, I'll just read this one, but in John, the 3rd chapter, verse 36, in the New American Standard Bible, it says, "He who believes in the Son has eternal life, but he who does not obey the Son will not see life, but the wrath of God abides on him." So those who believe, who teach faith only, belief only, or faith only, this certainly goes against that, because he who believes in the Son has eternal life, but he who does not obey, so we have to have the works, don't we? The Son will not see life if they do not obey. So implying that if they obey, if they believe and obey, they will have life. You know, belief, as normally used in the Bible, means anything that is involved in a man's response. And in this case, to Jesus Christ. Okay, any questions or comments on verse 7 or thoughts? Verse 8. Someone read verse 8. Okay. Now again, I'll ask the question, he who? Who are we talking about? John the Baptist. Was not that light. That light is who? Christ. the Logos, the Word. But John, how did what was the express purpose of John then? What does it tell us in that verse? What was the express purpose of John? He wasn't the light, but what did he do?
Bore witness.
So he was the one that pointed out and said, "There, it's not me." And he was really particular to do this. It's not me. There he is. There's the Word. There's the light. So he pointed out the true light, which was, it says, was sent from God. That was back in verse 6. We learned that. So I wanted you to just look at the distinction between John and Christ in these beginning verses. It said about John, who was sent. But Christ, or the Word, what was it about him? It doesn't say he was sent. What does the very first verse of the chapter say? He was in the beginning. He existed there. He wasn't sent. He wasn't created. He wasn't made. He was there. Christ was there. John had to be sent. Okay, now let's move from verse 8 into verse 9. And here in verse 9, we're still talking about the Word being manifested to the Jews and their rejection of Him. And we've already seen that John the Baptist witnessed, and we know that his testimony was rejected. So now we're going to see how Jesus' own witness is rejected in verses 8 through 11. So someone read verses, not 8 through 11, 9 through 11. Someone read verses 9, 10, and 11. Okay, thank you. I want you to notice there are two words that dominate those three verses. What are they? Okay. Light and Word. That? Oh, the world. Yeah, right. The light and the Word and the world. So when you say the light, we're always talking about the Word too, aren't we? I mean, either the light or the Word. We mean Christ. We're talking about Him. But notice as we go down through there, there's light or Word. The Word is mentioned seven times in those three verses. And the world is mentioned four times. So the Word seven, the world four. What's the difference in the word and world? In the spelling of it, just one letter. I just happened to notice that this morning. You know, you just add one letter to Word, and it becomes world. Now, I don't know that that has any significance whatsoever, but I just thought it was interesting. Now, in verse 9, it starts talking about the true light, and what does the true light bring? What does it bring? Faith, it's life. All of those things is what it brings. But the basis of what it brings is a knowledge of God and His way for man. That's what the light, the true light, is here to bring and to present to us the knowledge of God and His way. Or His will for us. True light illuminates in order to show the way. That's why we have a flashlight. That's why we have headlights on our car. To illuminate, to show us the way. And notice it shows that way to who? To whom? And how does it say that? In that ninth verse. Gives the light to who? Every man coming into the world. So when we stop and think about that, that certainly goes against Calvinism, I think, because they claim that God has selected only certain people to receive the word. Certain people, they're just eternally damned, and certain people are eternally saved. But this says the true light is going to give light to every man that coming into the world. Now, that word world, I think we spoke about it earlier a little bit, but I'm going to go into it just a little bit more. That word world is cosmos, and it means the physical world or creation. But this word is also used in three different senses in John's gospel. And in what ways is the word is world used in John's gospel? We went through most of those, but we kind of go through them and we don't stop and think about world, that it might have three different meanings. One meaning is the natural, the physical realm, or the domain that was created. The second is the people who were in opposition to God and Christ. That's called the world. And number three, all people inhabiting the world. Sometimes it's used just to include all the people that inhabit or that have been created and born into the world. So sometimes we need to stop and think just exactly what does the world refer to when it's spoken or written for us. Let's just think a little bit and review back and think about what has John said about the light? What has John said about the light? It's true. Okay.
The darkness doesn't understand it.
Okay. Anything else?
The darkness won't overcome it.
They won't overcome it. Okay. Well, here's...
The light is Jesus.
That is Jesus. He is the light. He's the light of the world. So that's, I've just written down these things. Out of verse 4, it says, Jesus is the light of men. Okay, and that you've already said that. And I think Ben was saying, the light shines in darkness. And why does the light shine in darkness? What's the purpose of shining a light in darkness? That's where we need it the most, isn't it? So therefore, it shines where men need it the most. And Jesus can bring light to every man. And I think, that's an awesome thought, that Jesus came and was able to bring a message. He that's the light as a message to every person that came into the world. And when you stop today and think about advertising, the advertising industry, isn't that what they're trying to do, is to get the message out? Some of them not to the whole world, but to a segment or a population or different things. And then we're thinking about during this political season, they're trying to get the word out to everyone in the whole nation that can vote. And they're spending, what, is it billions of dollars? At least millions of dollars. Multi-millions of dollars just to try to get out that word, get out that message. But Jesus he came and brought a message that did go to the whole world, and it didn't cost $1 million. Well, I guess it cost his life. But I just thought that was, that's kind of amazing when we stop and think. And this was 2,000 years ago when they didn't have all this instant messaging and texting and TV and radio or any of that stuff. I want to just look and just think a moment more about the light. Kind of in the illustration of the light. When we have a well-lighted room, a flashlight is probably of little benefit. I could have a flashlight and shine it around. It might be very strong and you could see it, but really, we don't have a need for a flashlight or another light when we have the light that we have. But what happens when the light is turned out? It's a problem, isn't it? I mean, we have a problem when the light's turned out. For one thing, we can't see. And I mean total darkness. If you've ever been in a cave down deep in the earth, there is no light coming in. I've been in a few of those. And it's just like you can't see your hand right in front of your eyes. We can't see, we can't function, and we have to beware of dangers because, you know, if you start walking, you may trip, you may fall. But think about this. John did not point the people to a light, but he pointed them to a man. And that man was Jesus. And we're so blessed that we have Jesus as the light. Because we couldn't have light. You can't have life without light. And Jesus did come as the light, as the Word. So that gives us a little better definition of what the Word means. When we call Him the Word, the light that brings life. Okay, let's look at verse 10. Someone read verse 10. Okay, so here again we got that same thing, world. In the world, and the world was made. That means that He, or Logos, was involved. He was in the world, and the world was made by Him. So the Logos, Jesus, was involved. He created the world. That is, He created the natural realm and all the people that were in it. Now, the world did not refer to, or what did the world refer to when he's talking about the world in that last segment of verse 10? He uses...
He was in the world, the whole created thing that we call the world. He was in that. And then it says... that was made through him.
Yep.
And then when it says the world did not know him, then that's referring to the people that you referred to as the world.
Yeah. Those who did not know him. That would be the world.
Those would be the ones that didn't believe, right?
Right. They didn't believe. Yeah.
There were some that did believe.
That's right. There were some that did believe. Yeah. So they weren't included in the world. The world did not know him, because some of them did know him. They accepted, they received, they believed, and they became his followers.
Don't you, I mean, just thinking about this picture that we get here in this verse. Think about it, he was walking around and you were pondering some great thing that you were looking at, like some waterfall or whatever. How did that get here? Where did that come from that Jesus could be standing right there in the crowd with him? You're thinking, I wonder where in the world did this come from? I mean, just think how ironic that would be. And yet that's what happened.
Yeah.
He was right there with them. And it's like, and they're making all these thoughts in their head, you know.
Yeah.
Just almost weird to think about.
I know, and that was my next question. What are a few things of God that they did not know? These people in the world, the ones who refused to believe or didn't believe. Well, I've got three written down. Three things of God that they didn't know. Now, first one is in John, the third chapter, verse 17, which follows verse 16, and that it says that the world might be saved through him. They didn't know that, or they didn't accept that. And then in the 12th chapter, in verse 31, it says, now judgment is upon this world. So it appears they didn't know that. And then the verse that I think all of you will probably recognize, the John 14, verse 6. The I Ams. What did he say? I am way, truth, and the life. They didn't know that. They didn't. That's right. We've already looked at that. They didn't comprehend it. And we went through that, I think, and some reasons why they didn't comprehend it. But, you know, why is it that we fail to know certain people? Just think about it. Maybe there might be people that we see every day, or we have a chance to see them, but we don't know them. Why don't we know them? Now, there may be different reasons, but we don't take the time to get acquainted with them. And basically, we don't love them. And that's just natural. You don't love people you don't know. But if you take time to get acquainted with them, and then you have love for them, that flows right in with someone turn to 1 John chapter 2, verse 15.
Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in them.
Okay. So the love of the Father is not in them. So those people who were of the world, who wouldn't accept Christ, who rejected Christ, the love of the Father was not in them. And there again, we could take off on another rabbit chase here on, you know, what causes us to love the Father? And how does that come about? But we're not going to do that. So Him, it keeps talking about Him. And this is the one that Emily mentioned was so prominent in those other verses. So it's just prominent all the way through. This Him is Christ, the Word, the light. So far, how can we describe Him? Well, I just did. Light, life, the Logos, or the Word. Those are the things that we've been looking at. Okay, we're getting ready to start verse 10. 11. Sorry, we're getting ready to go with verse 11. Is there any comments on anything that we've talked about today, or anything you want to add, or questions you ask while we're waiting for them? Okay, if not, we got 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Let's go ahead and I'll read verse 11. And he came to his own, and his own did not receive him. Now he, being Logos, that's the Word, that's the truth, that's the light, he came into the realm which he himself created. And yet, his own, who would that be? His own. The Jews? The Jews.
I think we could take it to Jews and even be able to say people in general.
Okay. That's kind of what I'm thinking. It's the people he created. And specifically, yes, I think it does refer those chosen as God's own people, the Jews. They rejected him. And he came to this nation that should have been prepared above all people. It should have prepared itself for him, because God had talked with them and given them all kinds of signs and wonders and words and laws and the covenant. You know, he should have been welcomed like a king. But no, he was rejected. How could this be? They knew him all right. I mean, they knew him as Jesus of Nazareth, but the whole history of Israel was a training school, and that's what we read over in Galatians, the third chapter, and in verse 24, Galatians 4:24, if I can get there quickly. We know what that's talking about, don't we? A schoolmaster. 24. Galatians, pardon me, 3. That'll help. 3:24. Therefore, the law was our tutor to bring us to Christ, that we might be justified by faith. A tutor or a schoolmaster to bring us to Christ. So what are the reasons the Jews rejected Jesus?
He didn't look like the type they were looking for to be their Messiah.
Okay, maybe he didn't look like... Didn't look like royalty. And now, what about the Jewish leaders? What did they want for a Messiah?
They wanted somebody highly educated, I think. They also wanted someone to take them out of the reign of the Romans.
Yeah, and to take them out of that. And they would like to have someone to help them in their graft. And the things that they were doing that they shouldn't be doing. The Jewish people, they wanted a king that would put bread on their table. And a lot of it. I've noticed in the book of John, the term Jew generally is referring to an enemy of Christ. When the term Jew is used, it's generally referring to an enemy of Christ. And they were the ones that rejected him. Okay, we will begin... with a new section, actually, beginning in verse 12, next week then.